Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. Wherever you're at, with family, friends, celebrating, or just taking a wonderful day to yourself, every day of the week, every week of the year, we're here to share insights on how to empower ourselves. And today I'd like to reflect on health and nutrition, new information that can help us, including fiber protecting the good bacteria in your body, and even how marijuana causes tumor cells to commit suicide, from University in Spain. But I'm going to spend a little more time on the environment, especially new information from Bloomberg's Eric Roston on how West Antarctica is beginning to destabilize, quote, with intense unbalanced melting. And also, a lot of people want to close down Indian Point, I agree, but they believe that hydroelectric is the thing to replace it with. Well, new information today, 90% of so-called clean hydroelectric projects will usher in a new wave of mercury contamination. This is from Marco Torres of Prevent Disease, and we'll share that with you. And one of the most brilliant journalists in the world, certainly one that has a lot of experience at looking at major issues, and that's John Pilger. John, I interviewed recently. We have a lot of respect for him, and we're going to give him a longer segment today, about 27 minutes. But before John, we're also going to be hearing about Julian Assange. It did not make the media at all. And that's unfortunate, because why is he held up right now in a Ecuadorian embassy in London? Because of charges that he raped. That's the charges, I believe, two women. And he has stated that he will come forward, he will give evidence, he will, and in fact, he has presented a great deal of evidence to challenge the allegations, especially as one of his accusers is alleged to have strong ties with the Mossad. In any case, finally, after all these years of being accused but not being given an opportunity to challenge this, the Swedish government brought in its top prosecutor and spent 7 hours with him. I felt that you should hear this because it was virtually non-existent in the American media. But near the end of the report, which is a short report, it's only about 4 minutes, you'll hear people like Newt Gingrich and one of the leading hosts over on MSNBC and others talk about how he's not just dangerous, but he should be killed. And I didn't see anyone challenging these people for these statements and saying this is not the way that we treat whistleblowers. After all, whether you like or don't like him personally, of the 10 million documents that have been released through WikiLeaks, not one has ever been shown to be inaccurate. Now think of that. And after all, he has been a source of information that has told us the truth that we would never have known. It's given us a different perspective. So I'm going to share that as well. So let's begin. First up, I want to look at fiber. Now, there are different types of fiber. There are the fibers that we get in, let's say, the American diet, and those are generally refined carbohydrate fibers. They've been processed. And so what was really good about them, the roughage, has been removed. For example, when you eat a French fry, the skin of the French fry is where alpha-lipoic acid, a lot of the calcium, and the amino acids are. So you remove that skin, well, you're losing a lot of the nutrition, but you're also losing the fiber. What you get inside, the soft, or once you cook it, it's crunchy, but there's no real fiber. The same way with potato chips and pretzels. The good quality roughage has been removed. Now, your best fibers, of course, are a combination of your fruit fibers, especially berries. Berries are terrific because they really cleanse the intestine and keep it free of a lot of the debris that would ferment or putrefy. And then they also allow for good bacteria, the prebiotic bacteria. Then you have vegetable fibers. Vegetable fibers are not your best fibers because they don't pick up a lot of the debris. But your grain fibers do, like steel-cut oats. That's a terrific fiber. Millet, rye, brown rice, those are excellent. And then you have bean fibers. Beans are terrific, but so are nut and seed fibers. So when you combine all those in a good diet, a plant-based diet, you're keeping the intestine clean. We all know how a person feels uncomfortable when they're bloated, they're constipated, they're not regular. But we also know that we're not encouraging people to eat right. To the contrary, we say, well, if you suffer from, constipation and you're not regular, take this particular drink. Well, if you look, that drink is a clear drink. It may stimulate some peristalsis, the wave-like movement of the intestine, but it's not the kind of fiber we need. The diet provides that. And then, of course, if you put in some fermented food like sauerkraut, that's doing a great deal of good. This is the latest study. This is from the University of Michigan, and it says the following. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. I actually had one of my own articles published in that journal. It says, the findings of an international team of researchers of a protective effect for fiber against the ability of pathogenic microorganisms to penetrate and infect the walls of the colon. They examined the effects of dietary fiber in this on gut microbes. And what they found was that the fibers in the diet, especially the whole grain fibers and those from plants, were able to have healthier bacteria. So, quote, the lessons we've learned from studying the interaction of fiber, gut microbes, and the intestinal barrier system is that if we don't feed them, they can't eat you. So, that means you get the good fiber, you get rid of the sugars, and then you have healthier intestine. A vegetarian diet does not compromise athletic performance, Arizona State University. Vegetarian diets do not impact negatively athletic performance and even help aerobic capacity, according to a study comparing elite vegetarian and omnivore athletes. And so that's terrific. By the way, just very few athletes are vegetarian. Only about 7% are vegetarian, and only about 1% are vegan. And they find that with less protein and more antioxidants, more phytonutrients, you actually support better athletic performance. This was published in the journal Nutrients. My own thought on that is that there are some outstanding athletes. Thelma Wilson, one of the greatest athletes, Queenie Thompson, Joan Rowland, male athletes, and by the way, the best of the best was Louise Nottage. She was never beaten in any senior games, any of the championships at the national level, the world games. She was in her natural living running and walking club, just a normal average person who trained hard. All these people were vegans or vegetarians. They all became the best athletes in the world. Thelma Wilson, quite simply, is in a class by herself. Then you have the male athletes. And at the top of that list would be Sam Skinner and Sid Howard. These two individuals, Sid, I've known for a long time. In fact, he came to my running and walking club out on the boardwalk in in Brooklyn, way back in 1976. So we go back a long ways. And he is arguably one of the finest two half-miler and 800 meters and milers in the world. Vegans. And still running strong today. They just go from one five-year age group to the next. And they can set all the records. So when you're comparing a group that have been vegan for a long time and are elite athletes, and you see that both men and women And the older they get, it does not negatively impact. It actually is helpful. So I believe that we should have more athletes beginning to look at a change in diet. For example, in the New York races, we would drink beet juice and coconut water. And people would think, what's that? Well, they were drinking sugar water. Our beet juice gave us a lot of nutrients and also nitric oxide that improves circulation through the body. And coconut water replaces potassium. And potassium is one of your single most important nutrients to keep your heart healthy when you're racing. So good quality nutrition actually enhances athletic performance. And also, I'm a vegan, but I also haven't lost a race, I believe, in 32 years. Won over 600 and was athlete of the year multiple times. So for those of you who think, well, you're going to be a vegan, you're going to be puny, I'm 190 pounds, 6'2", have 2.6% body fat, and I'm competing now as I have for a long time. So you're not going to be puny, you're not going to be flabby, you're not going to be weak, you're not going to be impotent, you're not going to be, you know, tired. You can be vital, cut, muscles, strength, stamina, endurance, because of the quality of what you take in. A good study out of Spain talks about how a Dr. Cristina Sanchez was studying the molecular activity of cannabinoids over a 10-year period. And through her study, she and her colleagues found that the tetrahydrocannabinoid unexpected discovery was that it was able to impact brain cancer. It caused the cancers to commit suicide. And they didn't know why or how this happened. So they began to put all their energy into it and found out that when the cells are exposed to THC, the tumoral cells stopped growing, then destroyed themselves. And this occurred both in lab tests and animal tests. And Sanchez first reported her miraculous findings back in 1998. That's how long we've known that cannabinoids can kill brain cancer cells. And this was published in the European Biochemical Journal, FEBS. And according to Sanchez, quote, after the discovery of this compound that is called THC, it was pretty obvious that this compound had to be acting on the cells, on our organisms, through a molecular mechanism. Well, research finds that the human body is designed to use cannabis compounds. And there are thousands of studies out there on what it does in the body. But it will kill cancer cells, but it does not hurt healthy cells, cause the cancer cell to commit suicide. This was just one of the studies. Did we hear about this? This should have been headline news in every major newspaper in the world. Cannabinoids kill brain cancer cells. Now we have many people who have brain cancer, but they don't have access to this. Now, this is not the same as smoking marijuana. This is getting the active chemicals and then having them taken into your body in a liquid form. And you have to get those through a physician. But with so many states not even allowing medical use of this, and Hillary Clinton wouldn't, Barack Obama wouldn't, you know, the Vice President Spence says that he is against all marijuana use. So on the one hand, if you could save a life and how valuable that is versus having a political and ideological impact, why? Why hold on to that old bone? And yet that's what we're seeing in our society. Well, to add something else onto that, because we should, if we were a truly civilized society that cared about people, we would immediately release all the data through the National Library of Medicine on the medicinal benefits of the bioactive ingredients in the cannabinoids and start using it in all your cancers, all of them. Secondly, we would decriminalize all drugs and then expunge the records of everyone with marijuana conviction or with a nonviolent conviction, so you can go back into society and not be prejudiced. And this is in the University of British Columbia. Marijuana could help treat drug addiction, mental health. Quote, using marijuana could help some alcoholics and people addicted to opiates kick their habits, a University of British Columbia study has found. Quote, research suggests that people may be using cannabis as an exit drug to reduce the use of substances that are potentially more harmful, such as opiate pain medication. This is the professor at the university. And went into, when they looked at the medical cannabis and all that it does, it helps people alleviate pain, it helps people recover better mental health, helps take away anxiety and depression. So there's a whole lot of good if we weren't simply biased about this. And another, so we don't run out of time, I want to take a break, and we're going to come back. And I just want to mention one thing about the environment. Because long ago, if you go back and you were listening to shows, let's say 10 years ago, you heard me talking about the tipping points. Now there's over 30. And some of them have tipped, meaning there's nothing we can do to reverse what's going to happen. But it depends upon where you live and whether or not you would be directly or indirectly affected. If you're not living in a drought state, if you have plenty of water and your water's clean, good. But for at least 20 states in the United States, including Georgia and New York State, we're running out of water. And there's a great drought in a lot of counties. There's abundant water if you have an aquifer, but that may only help those people who benefit from the aquifer. If you're north of the aquifer, you're not going to benefit at all. And think of if you're the people living in California. You've got a lot of problems in California. So in any case, I believe that we're not paying attention to the environment as we should, unless we're directly impacted. This is the latest. This is from Eric Rustin of Bloomberg. If you want to see the future of New York and Tokyo and Mumbai, look no further than West Antarctica, where a warmer sea is turning ice into water that may be heading to our doorstep. The bottom of the world has drawn increased scrutiny from scientists over the last few years as West Antarctica ice loss in some places shows signs of becoming unstoppable. There's enough water locked up in the West Antarctica sea region alone to raise the global average sea level by 4 feet, and it's the fastest melting spot on the continent. A study issued Tuesday in Nature Communications measures directly just how dramatically glaciers are being gnawed at from beneath. The research focuses on those that empty into a section of the sea just south of the glacier. A significant portion of Antarctica is now subject to, quote, intense, unbalanced melting. Now, everyone's heard of global warming, and most understand that letting ice melt will eventually flood coastal cities. But many may not understand how these critical parts of the globe function. In West Antarctica, for example, glaciers flow, yes, they move, albeit slowly, off the continent towards the sea, terminating at a final grounding level, the extent of the ice that's lying on bedrock. From there, a frozen sheet called the ice shelf extends into the sea. The problem increasingly is the sea encircling West Antarctica has warmed up and is flowing beneath those ice shelves, washing grounding lines back and towards the continent. It's as if the foundation of your house were slowly being chipped away from below. It may be only a matter of time before the structure collapses. Now, why should that be important to us? Because I said that I had interviewed the scientist who, I believe it was his character that was portrayed by Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, and where he talked about chaos theory. We're in chaos theory, he told us, meaning there is no accurate mathematical model of when things are going to collapse, when the feedback loops are destroyed, and when we could end up waking up one day and seeing that overnight things have shifted beyond our imagination. So we're not looking at 100 years or 50 years or 20 years. We're looking at right now. Over the next 3 to 5 years, I could predict fairly accurately that we're going to see more Category 5 hurricanes, including some that had the potential to hit major cities. Now, mind you, if you thought Hurricane Katrina was bad, that was a Category 3. If you thought Hurricane Sandy was bad, that was Category 1. If you thought that we had some bad tornadoes, imagine doubling the size of those tornadoes, now tripling the amount of tornadoes. And earthquakes, we had over 3,000 earthquakes in Oklahoma, one state thus far this year, more than the rest of the country. And they're getting bigger. So we're going to start having the impact. 100 million trees in California are now dead. Those trees make it more susceptible to fires. 36,000 fires this year alone in the United States. Now, those fires sometimes are in places where there's no one living. But more and more, people are moving into areas with new developments. As a result, the fires are destroying a lot of homes and lives. We don't want to see that. So we've got to pay attention to the environment, like it or not. Become educated on it. We have articles from all over the world every day on our website. Go to GaryNall.com or go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and just download the articles. And finally on this subject, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 90% of the so-called clean hydroelectric projects will usher in a new wave of mercury contamination. A new study that's shared to us by Marco Torres has confirmed what many activists and environmental researchers have been stating for years. Hydroelectric power is not clean at all. In fact, Harvard University has found that over 90% of potential new hydroelectric projects will increase concentrations of neurotoxin methylmercury in the food chain. It's about 6% of electricity in the United States, 15% in China, and climbing, 41% in Sweden, 80% in Colombia, 96% in Ethiopia, and Canada is forecasting 22 new hydroelectric reservoirs in the coming years. Power by flowing water is often lumped together with wind power and solar power and biomass as renewable energy sources. But should hydropower really be considered a clean power source? Hydropower is a significant source of greenhouse gas emissions. A new study shows that the world's hydroelectric dams are responsible for as much methane emissions as Canada. The study from Washington State University finds that methane, which is at least 34 times more potent than any other greenhouse gas, like carbon dioxide, makes up 80% of the emissions from water storage reservoirs created by dams. What's more, none of these emissions are currently included in global greenhouse gas inventories. Now, developing hydroelectric resources is a key component of North American plans for meeting future energy demands. Microbial production of the bioaccumulative neurotoxin methylmercury is stimulated in newly flooded soils by degradation of the labile organic carbon and associated changes. So methylmercury has been highlighted in the alternative media recently for its role in drugs and vaccinations, specifically the use of thimerosal, a preservative use in vaccines. Well, dozens of scientific inquiries and studies on the adverse effects of thimerosal, including gastrointestinal abnormalities and immune system irregularities, have clearly shown that thimerosal-derived ethylmercury in vaccines is a mitochondrial toxin in human brain cells. So now we're finding that the production of hydroelectric also produces more mercury contamination. So just the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
To be, there's power.
I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. By the way, for all of our good friends up in Woodstock, I'll see you on Saturday night at 7 o'clock for the premiere of my new feature film documentary, The Plant Codes. And the next day, this coming Sunday, in Huntington, Long Island, the Huntington Art Cinema, at noon, I'll be premiering the same film. I'll be in person in both places. Look forward to seeing you there. Now let's hear this short clip about Julian Assange, something that should have gotten attention, but it didn't.
Are you ready?
The climax to one of the greatest political dramas is almost upon us.
We will make America great again.
He makes disparaging comments about our country.
I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
Making Donald Trump our commander-in-chief would be a historic mistake.
The data from that survey has Trump now leading Clinton by 1%.
Why won't he release his tax returns?
Take a look at WikiLeaks and just see what they said about Bernie Sanders.
I don't know anything about these emails.
What's wrong with having Russia drop bombs all the hell over ISIS?
Trump himself heaps praise on Putin and embraces pro-Russian policies.
We will build a great wall along the southern border.
Do you apologize to black people for mass incarceration?
Well, can I talk? And then maybe you can listen to what I say.
ABC News and the Washington Post has Clinton up 3 points.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Welcome to a Going Underground U.S. election special. With me is award-winning journalist and filmmaker John Pilger. John, surprised?
No. I think the only people who are surprised are those who enabled it to happen. And I'm speaking about mainly what I would call in the United States a liberal class. To a certain degree in this country, a liberal class. They told us that only the status quo, only a corrupt, warmongering status quo would be acceptable to the majority. They're surprised, will have their hyperventilating and their frustration and their frenzied reaction to this for a long time. They've created Trump in the same way they created Blair. In the same way that others like these people, like the kind of populace that Trump is, in the United States, they corrupted a voting system within the Democratic Party that ensured that another populist, Bernie Sanders, I don't think really he would have beaten Trump, but he was a populist, but instead the corrupt candidate. The embodiment of the status quo that has declared the whole world a battlefield was the candidate of sanity, the candidate for women. This grotesque campaigning for a candidate for a person who represented great rapacious power has been probably the most eye-opening side to this. I don't think Trump is. Trump was coming. You could see him coming a mile off, or a Trump.
But before we move to Trump, just remind us, you mentioned rapacious power there, of quite how the rest of the world, particularly the Global South, views Hillary Clinton like some sort of embodiment of evil. Why?
I don't know why they view her as the embodiment of evil. I mean, she is clearly the embodiment of a corrupt system. She is the embodiment of a very dangerous warmongering system that has declared the world a place where it can go to war wherever it likes, where it can bomb agricultural communities in Yemen, where half the children are malnourished, where it can do what it likes in Syria, do what it likes in Iraq. I think most of humanity regards that kind of behavior from the allegedly most powerful country in the world as abhorrent. And she is has been the embodiment of that. Now, whether Trump will be is an open question. He says he's anti-establishment, but of course he'll come with his own establishment. He's anti their establishment. I don't believe for a moment that he's anti the wider establishment of the United States. Indeed, he's a product of it. But, you know, the shock surprise is the same as the Brexit vote. A kind of how dare these people vent their frustrations at the ballot box. The truth is there was no one to vote for in the United States. There was perhaps Sanders earlier on, but he was a kind of a minority populist candidate with a large following, yes. But the system threw up those who could afford it. Trump had his own money. Clinton was backed by the Democratic Party. Clinton was backed by the arms company. She was the only candidate that among her financial backers included all but one of the 10 leading arms manufacturers in the world. People, for all kinds of reasons, don't like this. Mainly, the main reason is what has happened to their lives. The way a corrupt banking system has destroyed their lives, has destroyed jobs, destroyed whole cities and towns, the towns that the Democratic Party once claimed to represent. That's what they don't like, and that's why they voted for Trump. I would have thought they would have voted for a Trump. He articulated it very well. There's no question about that. But a Trump coming along up against a candidate representing this corrupt status quo, this corrupt establishment, would have won.
But even elites that are part of that corruption surely need to know facts on the ground. Why the elites and all the media, which goes along with it, NBC, ABC, CNN, BBC over here, why would the journalists, why would the people themselves not want to know the facts and realize that Trump was going to win? Because you said you weren't surprised. Yet they seem surprised.
They're not journalists. They're anti-journalists. One of the most revealing aspects of this has been the exposure of journalism. The exposure of journalism as an extension of that same corrupt established power that I've been speaking about. They're not independent. They are echo chambers. They amplify and echo that which is handed down to them. Look, and the worst, of course, the greatest echoes are the so-called enlightened, respectable liberal press. The New York Times has become a kind of Cold War propaganda sheet with all the nonsense about Russia interfering in this campaign. The Guardian has given up. Yesterday, we had in The Guardian an article called The Hall of Shame by Jonathan Friedland, in which he pointed the finger at a truth teller like Julian Assange, as if he would be to blame if Hillary Clinton, this paragon of liberal virtue, was defeated. It was grotesque. That's not journalism. And whether journalists now stand back, they can believe, they can sulk and wring their hands and say, we have somebody now is a monster. Not at all. There was a monstrous situation applied in the United States, and journalists enabled it. They, in a sense, they created Trump.
The liberals, the pro-Hillary
people. Yes, the media, because the media, along with the Pentagon, the CIA, the State Department, and all the rest, including the Republican Party, were Trump's opponents. But they were the shouters. They were the shouters, the BBC, CNN, as I mentioned, The Guardian, New York Times, and, you know, you name it. They were all there because Hillary Clinton represented them.
Okay, well, millions of people have watched your film that you made on Saturday, that was broadcast on Saturday. You mentioned Assange. Assange in that film said that he wouldn't be allowed to win, Donald Trump. But certainly if Hillary had been in power, not Trump, if Hillary was president-elect, would we expect what pressure on the Ecuadorian government and him just extradited out? Is there more hope for him?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not a futurist. I can't predict. Trump could turn out pretty much the same.
But he's been extolling the virtue of WikiLeaks.
No one really listened to Trump's narrative, as it were. They saw only this salacious side of Trump, getting Trump, in a sense, demonizing Trump. He certainly demonized himself, of course, but now it's different. Now they have to go back through all that news footage and what did that man actually say? You know, what can we expect? Well, they don't know. They don't know, and they're journalists. Extraordinary and shameful.
In the second half, I want to talk about Syria and Iraq, but you mentioned that we don't know, they don't know. Henry Kissinger, very closely allied to the Clinton campaign. So Jeremy Greenstalk was on this show, the Britain's ambassador to the UN, the other day, and he said, you know, when I was saying Kissinger, Negroponte, Armitage, they're associated with death squads and mass killing, and you're talking at the UN with them like they're important people to know and to get advice from. And he went, you know, they have experience. So
experience of killing people, so experience of bankrupting people, experience of starting wars, experience of turning the world into a battleground since 9/11, experience of producing true extremism, these so-called neoconservatives. They were around Hillary Clinton. They may well come back. They may well be drawn to Trump.
Kissinger had some meeting with Trump as well as Clinton.
Well, yes. Well, that's Kissinger. Kissinger, who should have been prosecuted a long time ago, that he appears regularly and is paid on television and is paid by television to appear on. This man is someone who should be prosecuted, and his opinion is sought. I'm not saying that ordinary Americans thought about that, but their own lives, the lives of working people and the lives of much of the renowned middle class of the United States have been eroded and destroyed in many ways. 2008 destroyed the lives of so many people in the United States. Homes were repossessed, jobs went. Cities that were once thriving became a sort of piles of rust.
And yet a Goldman Sachs candidate was expected to do well in the Rust Belt.
Really? Well, there's always farce and satire. I mean, the whole thing feels like satire. Certainly the reporting and the misrepresentation of this political year has been a kind of black satire, in a sense. You know? And it's something that we in the media really have to come to terms with. I'm not sure we will. The media played a major role in beating drums for the invasion of a country, Iraq, in which probably a million people were killed. The media played a major role in the beating of drums for the destruction of Libya, which, as Julian Assange explained in his interview with me, was Libya, the cork in the African bottle, as he described it, created the migrant, so-called migrant refugee crisis, much of it of coming from Africa into the Europe.
Okay, John, we're going to have more on foreign policy in part two. Thanks for now. Join us after the break. Welcome back. You're watching a Going Underground US election special. With me is award-winning filmmaker and journalist John Pilcher. John, before the break, we were talking about Iraq and Libya. Do you think Trump's denunciations of foreign warmongering in the campaign mean that there are signs of hope when it comes to U.S. intervention?
Look, I don't know. They could be seen as signs of hope. If we class Trump as the isolationist, which plays a very significant role in American history, that he draws back, America first, that was the movement. I think he draws from that well, and that means leaving the world be, to a certain degree, for a while. I'm not sure about that. The United States is not run by a president. It's run by a massive national security machine. There's no doubt presidents, certain presidents, have had very considerable influence, particularly one like Trump, who now has Republican Senate and House, although a lot of those Republicans were his enemies. So it's a new path to tread. But you know, what has struck me is the silence of those with the facility, with the privilege of being able to analyze and help us understand, to make sense of this extraordinary American year leading up to this extraordinary result. The silence of, particularly of media, and particularly of the so-called liberal class, who have enabled so much of this, their silence about, first of all, about Iraq, their silence about Libya, more than silence, their collusion with those dreadful events that are so described in Clinton's emails. You know, I think the emails that WikiLeaks published, that Assange spoke about the other day, really exemplify the very corruption. When you have the campaign manager for a candidate for president of the United States is an officially registered agent of Saudi Arabia, and that Saudi Arabia and Qatar are funding the Clinton Foundation, and Clinton, as Secretary of State, is approving arms sales, including the biggest arms sales in history, to Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
And of course, in your interview, Assange used the emails to say that yes. Clinton knew that, according to Clinton, those governments are funding ISIS.
Well, there it was. Clinton said, "We know," and Clinton had known all along. I mean, that's a fact. It's in her own words. She knew that Saudi Arabia, which, as we understand, supplied the nationals for 9/11. Saudi Arabia, which is almost the enemy of humanity in its policies, particularly in the Middle East, there it is trying to destroy poor, impoverished little Yemen at the moment. These are the friends. These are the friends of the Democratic candidate for president. Is it any wonder that she was beaten?
We do ask the Saudi ambassador on this show and for comment. We don't get very much. You mentioned the security apparatus that is there, whoever is president. They certainly must have been alarmed when Trump appeared to be, in the establishment's view, weakening NATO by statements about NATO members having to pay their own
money. Yes, especially, you know, he at the time of the Democratic the Republican National Convention, he demanded that shipment of arms, new arms to NATO, was taken off the platform of the Republican Party. So all kinds of bells must have rung. That's why the CIA so unusually came out against him. That's why the State Department, all those so-called diplomats and others, signed a long letter. That's why the Pentagon did the same thing. He wasn't doing as he was told, in a sense. Now, whether his own establishment, we hold our breath, his own establishment may well do something very similar. There's no question about this is not a matter of so-called supporting Trump. That's over. Americans have voted him in as president. But we really should have, we do have a right to understand and analyze the true implications of this and how it got to this.
But in terms of US national security, Saudi Arabia and its ally Israel could retaliate for any possible Trump policy that was going to be make a big change.
Yes, they could. They could. All sorts of things could happen, and the United States could decide to make a genuine peace accord with Russia and with Syria, and bring a semblance of order and peace to that country. That could happen as well. I mean, as we speak, the Times in London this week published a story that it seemed to come from official sources that said that NATO was bringing in hundreds of thousands of troops into its right up against the western borders of Russia, Estonia, Poland, and that
British troops.
And British troops hundreds. As well. British troops as well. This provocation comes on top of the most venal propaganda that began, really got underway with Ukraine inverting the truth about a US managed coup in Ukraine into a Russian invasion. I mean, that's quite an achievement. But in a sense, it worked because it laid the ground for this NATO buildup, the biggest since the Second World War. NATO buildup right on the borders of Russia, exactly where in 1941, in Operation Barbarossa, Hitler's invasion poured into the Soviet Union. I mean, what greater provocation is there? What recklessness? Now, I don't know what Trump will do about this. He may well go along with it. He likes the Pentagon. He likes the military. He said all that.
I mean, literally in the past 24 hours, while all the election news has been out, the EU has sanctioned Crimea and has said we're going to heap many more sanctions on Crimea. Presumably a president-elect would have ramped up sanctions against Russia.
Something like 40% of the world, in one way or another, is under American sanctions. The EU usually follow on. The EU is not an independent collection of nations. By and large, it follows the United States. Sanctions impose themselves on countries all over the world, destroying life. We'd have famously, infamously, destroying life in Iraq, killing, according to UNICEF, 500,000 infants under the age of five between 1991 and 2003. Sanctions led by the United States and Britain.
Okay, I have to mention my interview with Jeremy Greenstock again, the British ambassador to the UN. When I said, why isn't this figure that you just mentioned in his new book, he said, well, that was Saddam Hussein's fault, not the British government's.
Yes, of course it was Saddam Hussein's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. That the bombing and the dismantling of Yugoslavia was entirely Milosevic's fault. It had absolutely nothing to do with Blair's and Clinton's bombing and destruction of so much of that rather fragile federated country. It had absolutely nothing to do with Marilyn Albright in her, when she was then Secretary of State, of deceiving Milosevic and telling him that unless he agreed to the military occupation of his country, then indeed he would be bombed. Madeleine Albright, of course, was Hillary Clinton's, one of Hillary Clinton's most fervent supporters. Of course, it has everything to do with these people. It has everything to do with this imposition of great power around the world. That's the issue. Around the world and in ordinary people's lives, we live in Britain with the imposition of an extreme ideology with this awful name, neoliberalism. Or, you know, they hauled a perfectly good word out of the dictionary, austerity, and now that's part of the ideology. All of it unnecessary in this rich country. The imposition of power on people's lives is the issue today. And in whatever form it's taken, that's what Americans, the majority of Americans, took to the ballot box with them.
And now I know you've been working on a new film about the ramping up of US tensions with the superpower of the century, as it were, China.
Yeah.
What advice, if you were an appointee in a Trump cabinet or at the State Department, would you say?
Please.
You never know. No one seems.
Please.
Would you give him about how to change and transform US policy vis-a-vis China?
I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know where
to start. Is the policy
how dangerous this is. We have on two fronts. We have in the Northern Hemisphere, up against the border of Russia, the greatest buildup of US-led NATO forces since World War II. In Asia and the Pacific, we have the greatest buildup of US naval forces since World War II, aimed at China. We have something like 800 or 900 US bases around the world on every continent, 400 of them encircling China. Many more, I think, I haven't counted lately because they keep cropping up encircling Russia. It only needs, I'm not saying that those who are doing this want nuclear war, even they must understand that it would mean their own destruction. But this recklessness, I've often felt, could lead to the kind of mistake or accident that begins something. And that is all about the imposition of power that comes from within the West. That is the issue. That's the issue that this election campaign has thrown up, and that's the issue about which so many of those, the educated liberal class, those with the privilege of public platforms, have kept silent about. Keeping that out of the campaign in the United States has been a liberal exercise. Keeping it out of the reporting of the campaign in this country has been the same exercise.
John Pilger, thank you. That's it for today. You can join us again on Wednesday when we speak to former Texas Republican congressman and one-time presidential candidate Ron Paul about Trump's triumph in the White House. In the meantime, get in touch via social media. We'll see you on Saturday, 16 years to the day that Tim Berners-Lee apparently published his first proposal for what would become the World Wide Web.
Now, let's go to one of the most interesting and, in my mind, one of the most important thinkers. I would only challenge him on one point, where he said, well, there was no one to vote for. He might have felt that there was no one to vote for who would win, but there is certainly someone in this last election to have voted for, Jill Stein, who could then have a platform for all those more idealistic millennials, progressives, and others to start a whole new party campaign. Let's listen now to John Pilger. That's it, everyone. I hope you have a wonderful day, peaceful day, meditative, reflective. I'll be back tomorrow at noon. Nice to have you with us.